and welcome to episode 23 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we'll be talking about game expansions. This was a question originally submitted by our friend Andrew Fayesh, and that was promoted to an entire show topic. We'll try to do it justice, but first, let's go off topic, starting with some news, announcements, and feedback.
All right, first announcement. This is our third episode we've been announcing it. Our super secret, listener-only Valentine's Day couples contest.
Shh,
don't tell anyone. I don't think anyone is, because your odds are still really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, it's not, let's just say, send us an entry. You do that by sending us a Valentine's Day contest subject email to tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Tell us about a game or two that you think are good for couples or games that you like or whatever. Just tell us something that you like and you will be entered. You get bonus entries like you do in all of our contests. This is our second one, so I can say that.
Mm-hmm.
you get an extra entry for every like on Twitter and Facebook. You get 3 for every share or retweet and 5 for an iTunes review. And there may be more other ways to get bonus entries that we'll cover in just a moment. The deadline is February 5th at 6 p.m. Central Time. The winner will air on February 7th, which is a week before Valentine's Day. The intent is that we can get you out your prizes, which is, I forgot to say, at least two-player games, a couple-couples games. So I want to get those to you before Valentine's Day. And for everyone else, we want to give you great suggestions that you can do for Valentine's Day. I know it's all the rage these days for couples to say, let's not do anything for Valentine's Day. I disagree.
Yeah.
Get one of these games and play games on Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
If Sydney was here, she'd be like, and you can make it a strip game too. But this is a family show.
Right.
So purely above the table.
Right. Sydney's mom said something about playing strip games today.
Kitty may have gone wedding dress shopping with Sydney today.
It was really fun. We had a great time.
So I don't know anything about it. I have your phones on right now.
Headphones. So wait, you're going to do the traditional not see it before mm-hmm.
the
day?
Yeah.
And nope. That's great.
That's all her. Like, you, whatever you'd pick out, I will love.
Nice.
I promise.
Sure.
So anyway, yes, contest. We're not doing a social media push. This will probably be one of the few contests we do this with. So if you want to enter, this is the one. You should enter all our contests. But let's see. We have a few announcements, so I'm going to try to get through these as quickly as possible. And our weight announcements will be at the end of the announcement section. It just feels better there. But anyway, the next one. I am working on getting us interviews with game designers and game publishers. In fact, there may be 2 of them coming up within the next 4 to 6 episodes. So keep an ear out for those. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go too much detail until we've actually have the interviews, but I have agreements from both of the people I'm working with. We are going to record them about a week before we actually air them, just, we haven't done interviews before, so it's
it's a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah. So we work well as a threesome because we're all looking at each other, right? And so when we put someone in on the phone or through Skype or something, how is that going to work? So
it all fall apart?
I know.
But I think people should be, if you're into board games, obviously we're not going to give away who it is, but I think they should be relatively excited about this.
Mm-hmm. Like,
I think it's a good little scoop you got there.
Yep. If you haven't heard about these people, you should. And if you have heard about these people, you'll be excited to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Winter Fantasy is coming up. This is the first convention I go to of the year. This is in February, the first weekend of February. This is mostly just a Dungeons & Dragons convention. And in honor of that, in a couple episodes, we're going to do a full episode on Dungeons & Dragons. Maybe not fully into the rules, but I'll give you some history on it.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the current edition.
We won't let Chris bore you to death, I promise.
I promise. We might go to organized play and how that works and stuff like that. But that'll be the episode just before I go to Winter Fantasy, so that should be cool. I figured out how to submit a seminar event to Origins.
Ooh.
So I've officially submitted a request for a seminar to Origins.
I think I've only just got comfortable doing the podcast. Like being in a room with real people asking real questions. I don't know. Maybe it'll be easier. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine.
Okay.
So this is my way of forcing Josh and Kitty to come to Origins with me.
Smart move.
Mm-hmm.
The way I envision this is we'll sit on the up front as a panel. We'll have our microphones, all our same recording equipment, the iPad, all the soundboards. We're going to do a live show. All our shows are basically live.
Yeah.
I will have a microphone that points out to the audience. And so we'll talk about the games that are new at the show. That'll be basically the show topic is what's new at Origins. And taking questions from the audience and, you know, they'll just, we'll record the room and see how it goes.
Yeah.
So it's not approved yet. As soon as it is, because event submission doesn't end until March.
Right.
So they won't have all the scheduling and all that stuff until then. But I'll keep you posted. At this point, though, if you want to make plans to go to Origins, just Google Origins Game Fair. It's mid-June, I believe. Then I'll get you actual dates if that's not right.
Yeah, it was the first convention I went to, and it was just so good. And like followed it up with Gen Con, which is bigger, but I actually enjoyed Origins more, so yep. I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah, you can expect somewhere between 12 and 14,000 people at the Columbus Convention Center, Columbus, Ohio Convention Center.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like there's like, it's not suffocating. There's not so many mm-hmm. people. Lots of places to play games, lots of things to see. There's a huge dealer room, but it's not overcrowded.
Yeah.
You can talk to publishers. You're going to see a lot of new games that are just been released. It's a great show to go to. Finally, our second to last announcement, I've decided to start a Patreon. If you're not familiar with Patreon, it's a way for people to support people who create content of some sort, any sort, mm-hmm. anything at all. And so we're going to start a Patreon. It just to give you cost to the podcast, it costs about $10 to $12 an episode to do the podcast. So mm-hmm. this is just for, you know, essentially hosting sites and whatnot, not covering any kind of equipment or games I buy or shipping on contests or anything like mm-hmm. that. None of that. It's just $10 or $12. So it's not a money thing, honestly. It's more of just so we can get more support, so we can see that people are appreciating what we're doing type of thing. And I put some cool levels on there, I think. But if you guys have suggestions, let me know. So we have...
As you know, we are super into feedback. We're about to do a whole bunch of it.
So. Yes, we're about to do a whole bunch of feedback. But there's four levels right now. The $1 an episode level is just a thank you level. We'll give you a shout out at the end of our episodes, probably to everybody, unless the list gets too long. The $2 one we call the auto entry level. So if you support us at $2 mm-hmm. an episode, every contest we run, you'll automatically be entered in. At $5 an episode, and there's a limit of only five people that can do this, you'll be a friend of the show, which means we're going to give you a shout out at the top of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then the crazy one is $30 an episode. Every 6 weeks you're at this level, you get to come on the podcast, pick the topic, and the four of us will discuss whatever topic mm-hmm. you want.
That's so pretty cool.
Every mm-hmm. single one, too, gives you bonus entries into any of our contests. So if you back us at $1 an episode, you get 10 bonus entries to all of our contests. You still have to email us to enter at that level. But if you do, you get the bonus entries. And we have some goals on there, too. So what we're hoping is that we can raise enough money to be able to do videos and live plays and, you know, spend more time and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of post-editing for the video kind of stuff, because that's going to be necessary. Trust us, when we get to the game of the day, that game could be edited down into about 40 minutes on TV. It took us maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours to play. And finally, and I promise I'll shut up and hand this over to Josh and Kitty, Chris's weight loss update. I'm at 202.8, which puts me down 2.8 pounds. So an overall, since January 1st, down 12.2 pounds.
That's amazing, by the way. Well done. Seriously.
Thank you. I'm trying. The 2.8 is really where I want to be. I want that consistent loss. So,
Well, you don't want to be higher than that.
I don't want, because losing like 5 or 6 pounds a week is not good. Yep. So this is where I hope to be and kind of continue that trend. So,
nice. So yeah, and my weight update, I'm now at 179.9. So I've 2.4 pounds down from last week and 3.4 overall, which is pretty good.
Yeah, we were talking like last week was a pound, but this week kind of compensated for last week.
Yeah.
You're like, it felt like I should have lost more.
No, yeah, I was like, did really good the first week, I felt, on eating and all the rest of it. And then this week, I was like, Gloria took me to get like ice cream filled donuts from Fire Cakes, which is this great donut place in Chicago. And I was like, there's no way I've lost weight this time. And I was like, two down. Surprise. Okay, that's made up for it. Yeah, that's made up for the first week. Yeah. So that's good.
I do recommend not going to the ice cream donut sandwich place every day.
It was not my idea. She was like, I'm taking you somewhere. It's a surprise. And because it was a surprise, I couldn't say no. I was like, cool, we'll split one.
Yep. Yeah. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to turn this over to Josh and Kitty for our relatively long feedback session.
Yeah. Well, we got a few iTunes reviews, right? But this is the first one. There are, and we found out there was reviews in other iTunes country stores. Is that right?
Yeah. So basically, the US store is the one we look at. So the English one. But I checked out Canada. There's one here, which we've copied here.
From the Grave Digger.
Yep.
I love the name. It's like...
The Grave Digger.
Yeah. And it's like, I feel like that's like a monster truck driver guy.
Yeah.
It's like a famous...
yeah.
It's amazing that I know that. I did go to one rally for the people watching.
Mm-hmm.
So The Grave Digger says, "This is a great gaming podcast. I recommend it for anyone who is into tabletop games or has wanted to know more about them before getting into them. The hosts sound like they're having a great time." Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Which makes
it... making it well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great actors. Which makes it fun to listen to. Only downside would be that their mics pick up some odd background noise at times.
Yeah, so we're working on that.
No dog this time.
Yeah, no dog.
I know. He's safely upstairs with buddies, so he's not howling out of sadness.
We turn the heat and air conditioning off, and when we record now...
I'm really sorry if I'm shivering in the background.
My feet are freezing. I need to get some slippers and leave them here.
I think I accidentally made some slurping noises because I was trying to warm up with coffee because it's so cold in here.
We can't guarantee there's not going to be a siren every once in a while, but otherwise we're pretty good. So,
so this is on to the next one, right? Is Kitty, are you taking this one?
Oh, yeah. So from Ed Biddle on Facebook, he says, "Hey, I've been listening for a while now, and I love your content. That said, as a competitive Magic player, this last episode had me actually shaking my phone in frustration. Not in a bad way, but in a I wish I could help you guys with your Magic knowledge kind of a way. The format with the general that you were talking about is called Commander. If you're looking for a fun way to play the game casually without spending a lot of money, Wizards actually releases 5 Commander-specific pre-constructed decks every year. This last year's lineup was actually really well-designed and a ton of fun. You can find them at your local LGS, which...
local gaming store.
Double local there. Yeah. Or at Walmart for about $30, $35. I highly recommend them if you're in... if you enjoyed playing the game, they are fully fleshed out decks and comparable power levels with interesting themes."
Yes, thank you, Ed. And one of the things that we're trying to build up as well this year is our goal is to build up a community online. So we have a Google Plus, we have a Board Game Geek, we have Facebook, we have Twitter. Honestly, we're probably going to put our most of our time in Facebook.
I'm already super addicted.
Yeah. So Kitty is our Facebook admin.
Guru.
Yeah. So she's monitoring the Facebook. I monitor the Twitter. Josh just comes over at 6 o'clock on Sundays and we get his voice.
It's great. It's so great. I'm really lazy.
Speaking of your voice.
From Andrew Fayash. Good old Andrew Fayash, who we've had a number of times, commented on our collectible card game episode. "Hello, Chris, Josh, Kitty, and potentially Spencer."
No, Spencer.
"I really was surprised to hear your opinions on Yu-Gi-Oh!, which we sadly did not enjoy."
Correct.
Chris, I tried to defend.
Chris actually called it the worst game ever. Am I right?
Just the worst game ever. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And I kind of agreed with you, but I don't think I have enough experience to have any authority on that. "I must note," Andrew says, "that I haven't played it in years, last of which was a GBA game that I revisited a couple of years ago. I've never had a game go less than 3 turns, which is what we mentioned last time that happened to us, which makes me think that the game may have changed quite a bit over the years in a bad way. At the time I played it, I found it quite enjoyable and quite interesting. It was nice to have a card game that wasn't reliant on energy cards or some sort and still seemed pretty nicely balanced. It may be worth another look for an older iteration."
Yeah, so I was at Target today and I was looking over at the Yu-Gi-Oh cards, and every time I looked at the card, it just gave me this feeling like, oh my God, why? Oh
you
my
should
God,
see why? Chris's face right now.
There was one of the cards that was pictured on the back of the box had like 17 little flame icons that you had to count to know that it was level 17.
Yeah.
Even if the game were good, even if there were variations of it that were, the graphic design of the cards is so horrible that I still wouldn't get it. They have things that are in brackets. Like, that's placeholder text to say replace this later with something cool. It just feels like they're just riding on the name. Sorry, Andrew. I agree with you. I probably... The Game Boy one I actually did play, and okay. I don't mind that one.
Okay.
In video, I think it actually works a lot better in video game form. Uh-huh. And it's not even that I don't like the license.
Does it last longer than 3 turns?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot more to it.
On the video one.
I also agree that it solves the energy problem by you don't need energy. So there aren't... It's not everything bad about the game for sure.
Right.
It's just, there's enough there that I'm just like, I would rather play some other card game, which we'll talk about maybe next episode, actually. Continue.
As for Pokemon, I couldn't agree more that the type advantages in-game really hinder more than help the fun and depth. I get that it only logically makes sense when considering the source material, but it really limits the playstyle. Also, some of the types are grouped to up to the same energy cards, water and ice, fighting and rock, psychic and ghost, which allows weaknesses variations within a single deck when using these types. But it gives a big disadvantage to types that aren't combined, like fire, grass, or electric. I recommend a house rule to truly enjoy the game. I've used this since I was a kid. Forget energy typing. Allow any type of energy to work with any Pokemon, with the exception of colorless for reasons obvious to those that play the game. And just watch how much this changes your approach to deck building and gameplay. With this method, you can get as much variance in your deck as you would a team in the video games, which makes types, advantages, resistances to be more of a mid-game strategy and planning aspect than a crutch for your entire game. I also recommend avoiding the EX cards. They really seem to break the game unless both players have a bunch of them. I'm assuming he means that they're very overpowered.
Yeah, Sylvia was actually talking about this. Like, don't worry, my deck doesn't have any EX cards in it.
Yeah,
you know,
she knew.
Yeah, so I think EX is just extra broken, maybe?
They seemed powerful when I played with them, so I think that's what he's getting at. Yeah.
But I think it does add, it adds a different kind of flavor. But I kind of like this idea of just, you know, using any kind of energy to do whatever, and then you don't have to worry about being as energy screwed as you could get on the game.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's less frustrating that way, because you can actually start flowing things out instead of being like, oh, I've only had one more electric energy. No,
sorry, they're just both staring at me now. I don't know. I haven't played in a while. I'd have to revisit it. But I really liked the type and resistance. I remember that being the fun part of the game for me, was like trying to come up with a hybrid deck solution that had enough energy types and enough different kinds of Pokemon that you weren't completely hindered.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's interesting because, like, we talked about Magic as well, and there's a lot of different game variations on Magic. I don't know that there's a lot of different game variations on Pokemon. Like, you normally just play Pokemon straight up. I haven't heard it, like, multiplayer Pokemon or anything like that. So this might be an interesting way. Like, it's just a variation on
Maybe. All right. So from Mike. Hello there. I've been listening for about 2 months now, and I like the podcast. Your format is good. I like the off-topic and on-topic parts. For a two-player game, I recommend Legends of Andor. It's great for couples since it's cooperative and plays well at two. Also, I know Chris has a Kickstarter habit. Boy, does he.
Oh, my God.
So I was hoping he might check out the game my friend designed. It's a dice activation that has a really great offering, cooperative and competitive play. It is called Mageling. And I have helped him play test and demo over the past year. And hopefully this week we will have a live video playthrough to show it off a little bit more.
Ooh. And in fact, there is a live video playthrough on the Kickstarter page. It's done by Rado. He does a lot of Kickstarter prototype previews. And I really like his videos. He did a really good kind of run through how the game plays. You'll be happy to know that I have now backed it.
just could not resist. Yep.
Well, it's the price is okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I think $27 with shipping, so it's certainly reasonable. It's a small box game, and I like small box games. It has a lot of interesting mechanics. I don't know that it's called Mageling. Dice activation game is underneath it. I'd probably put a the or a or something. But otherwise, I think it looks great. And it's
Mageling?
With Mageling. It just says Mageling, and then underneath it says dice activation game. So, and the way it works essentially is you roll dice to activate cards that you're buying from a pool. Mm-hmm. It has a little bit of an Ascension feel to it. We'll talk more about it in my Kickstarter section. I think we have one more relatively long feedback that Josh is going to give us.
Sure, yeah. From Colm Doyle. Hi, Kitty, Josh, and Chris. Hope this finds you well. I left an iTunes review that nicely sums up my thoughts about the show, including some ideas for future topics. Been listening for a few weeks now. Had been going through the back episodes and have now made my way to the present. Well done with the podcast. Thanks for putting so much content in such a short space of time.
Thanks. So other podcasts will say start episode one and listen forward. We say start at episode four and bear with us for a few episodes.
Because Kitty arrived and it was instantly four, better.
Yeah.
Like a breath of fresh air.
But yeah, if you listen to a few of the current episodes and then go back, you'd be like, wow, they've really come a long way.
As you all recently talked about your personal top five games, I thought I'd tell you about my current favorite game. It's a tabletop RPG from Sweden called Simbarum. The core rulebook was released in Sweden in 2014 to be followed by other supplements. And after two successful crowdfunding campaigns, almost all the material is now available in English, including a GM screen, an advanced player's guide, a campaign book, an art book, and translations in other European languages are in the works. Here's what I like about the game. It's a dark fantasy setting, full of danger and where the elves are not your friends. It is very easy to venture where you shouldn't and die unless the GM is being very merciful. And I'm going to stop for a second because that's interesting that he thinks it's really good that you can die quite easily.
There are different types of play styles. Uh-huh. So sometimes you want to play and the characters are the heroes of the book. And heroes don't die. You know, they may come across things. They may stumble. They may fall.
Right.
But they always get up.
Right.
Other people like the fact that there's risk. And if you do something, you have a penalty to it. And you can die. So it really depends on the kind of play style. I don't know that Kitty would like this.
Well, no. I think it depends. You need to know that going into character creation.
Exactly.
If you're making a character, I tend to get attached to my characters. I give them backstories. I design miniatures and paint them. And that's part of the fun for me. Mm. But if I knew, like, there's a chance of dying, I'm not going to get attached to that character. I'm just going to, like, focus on the stats. I'm going to be much more analytical about how my character will play.
Yep.
Less focused on, like, the background. It's much more of kind of a video game almost,
yes,
rather than like a table, like, oh sorry, I can hear my voice going. So it's much less like the actual role playing,
right?
So much
as it's almost like a cooperative control game that you are trying to beat as a group, and it's a hard game to beat, so it feels like a real challenge. Like, oh man, we were so close that time, but
and it's not that you don't necessarily get invested in your characters, you can for sure. You just understand that there are risks. You could die. And if you do die, that's okay.
Yeah.
You're going to roll up a new character, in air quotes, roll up, depending on the game system.
Yeah.
A new character, and you'll come back. But
oh, like immediately during that play?
It depends on the style.
Okay.
There's some game styles that are called funnels where you come to the table with six or seven characters. And if you can get through without them all dying, you consider it a success.
Right. That's not too bad. Okay. Yep. Cool. Okay, so following on. The artwork he likes. The graphic design and writing are gorgeous. 3, the story is fantastic. The summary is that your ancestral homeland was destroyed in a war with the Dark Lords. The civilized humans fled north to build a new kingdom in proximity to the massive and dangerous forest of Devakar. You play as an adventurer, making your way in the world and earning your crust. You may even get rich someday, should you live that long. Overall, it is about mankind's struggle to control and exploit nature and her resistance to and revenge on mankind. He also likes that it's a low fantasy world where magic is rare and is corrupting if used in the wrong hands. Corruption and shadows are part of the game mechanism.
It's a lot of words.
Got there. The rules are simple to pick up for players new to RPGs. In fact, it was the game that got me into role-playing a few months ago, and I now GM for a few colleagues at work on a fortnightly basis. I have yet to play as a player. I went straight into GMing.
God, nice.
That's a bold move.
Yeah. I'll also mention you can get this on DriveThruRPG, so you can get the PDF. I believe it runs about $20 for the base book. I may or may not have done that, but...
And so he says, if you can, please give a shout out to my players, Brian, Ellie, Malloroy, and Aloe.
Shout out.
Accomplished.
All the best, he says. Calm. P.S. Some background so you know a little bit about your listeners.
This is my favorite part, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Me too. I'm an Irish guy living in Estonia. During the day, I work in regulatory compliance for a fintech, and at night, I slog away at my PhD in linguistics. I'm the creator behind the constructed language Nymerian, which appears in the comic series Glow. I moonlight as a proofreader and hope one day to be a game designer. Your podcast encourages me to realize my desire and get involved in tabletop content creation and inspires me to have my own podcast. Oh my God. How does he have time to do all that?
When does he listen to our podcast?
Yeah. I mean, if we're inspiring you, that's great, but that inspires us.
I know.
Oh, massively. Yeah. Like, yeah. I kind of feel a little bit bad about myself now. No, it is totally inspiring. Like, that's amazing. Like, good on you, Colin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Sorry.
All right. On to our quick question of the day from Trevor Olson. What was the last argument that originated from playing a game?
Uh-oh.
I'm not talking to Josh.
we played a game today, and Kitty's well known as kind of a little bit of a sore loser sometimes. And there were a couple of times where you could say that I was kind of picking on her.
Well, it was a good move.
I felt compelled to do it, considering I had this character.
Lost.
Yeah.
I want to say
easily 40 points in one move of Josh's. Yeah. He took my strategy and just went, oh, that never happened.
Yeah, you've been building up to it for a few moves as well.
Watching Josh's face is just before he's like, Josh, or Kitty, he's like, Kitty, is this going to really screw you over? And she's like, I don't think it will. And she's like, I don't know. I think it might. And then he places the piece, and all her pieces go away. And she's like, yeah, that just ruined
and
my entire
now
game.
My game is over.
Yeah.
Because what you didn't know is I had the other card in my hand that was going to give me double points on all those pieces.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So last arguments that originated from playing games. Those are basically any game we just finished. Now, I will say that most of the time the arguments are very contained.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully, if you are arguing with someone about playing a game well after the game and it's not in jest, you might want to look for different game groups. But it's good to give each other a hard time at times.
Yeah,
it is.
And quite honestly, I think, and we call Kitty a sore loser, I don't really think she is. I think she's getting much, much better.
Oh,
like,
totally.
We did an episode on player types where we just kind of like, oh, I'm this.
Bash on Kitty.
And since then, we've kind of like, okay, I know this is about myself. And
to
like.
Even this game, like, I was taking ages of reading everything, deciding, making decisions, and these guys were making comments as usual. But I was like, yeah, I know. This is how I play. I'm enjoying it, though. I'm enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I don't think any of our play styles really stop us from enjoying playing with each other. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Well, we just keep doing it. So, but thank you, Trevor, for the question.
Thanks, Trevor.
Let's see. We'll go through the new games really quick. Codex is a new game I got this week, actually last weekend. We did a top five episode. And if we had done it an episode later, this would have been probably number one or two. It's essentially a replacement for collectible trading card games in my mind. Mm-hmm. All the cards are in one box if you get the deluxe box, which is $220, but you get everything that you would ever need to play. There's six different factions, two neutral factions, a total of 20 different heroes. You build your deck by picking three heroes. You get all the cards with those heroes. And then it's a duel head-to-head. You can play teams. You can play free-for-all up to five players. It replaces my desire to play Magic or Pokemon or any of these collectible trading card games because it has all of that feel, but without all of the continue to pay costs to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And yeah, so I've made you both play it. You guys have both played at least one game. So we're going to talk a lot more about this game coming up in a couple episodes. So we'll leave that for that.
Mm-hmm.
I also picked up Imhotep. I have not played it yet. The Arkham Horror card game, which I loaned to Kitty. Have you had a chance to play
Mm-mm.
it? All right. So we'll play that. Arkham Horror is the card game is like a 1-2 cooperative player game. It'll probably make an appearance on our Valentine's Day episode.
Mm-hmm.
It can play up to four players if you have two copies of the base set, but it's kind of a story driven thing. Kickstarter games. Delve. There's probably 22 days left in this. This is a dungeon building adventure game for 2-4 players. It's basically a kind of a tile laying adventure game, which is kind of cool. Alien Frontiers is Alien Frontiers relaunch. This game launched, I believe it was 2010, so like 6 years ago, and it was a surprise hit. Like, you couldn't find it anywhere. I have a copy, but it's a dice rolling worker placement game. So the dice you roll are the workers that you place, and the numbers on them are show you where you can place those workers and what you can do with them. There's an expansion that came out later. This relaunch includes the base game, the expansion, some promos with updated rules. So if you've never played Alien Frontiers, check it out. There's probably a little over a week left in the Kickstarter, but it looks really, really cool. They've updated the pieces, updated the quality of the game. Something to look for. The World of Smog is from Cool Minis or Not. These guys, Cool Mini or Not, or CMON, C-M-O-N is what their new name is. If they're Kickstartering, is that, that's not right. If they are putting something
Kickstarting something,
you should back it. So for $120, it gives you the base game plus like dozens of Kickstarter exclusives. This is a Victorian age steampunkish type of game. And then finally, Mageling. This was the game that was mentioned earlier. I just want to read the note from the designer because it is his first game, and I want to support any new game designers and their Kickstarters. So let's see. While designing Mageling, I drew inspiration from games such as King of Tokyo, Elder Sign, Smash Up, and most of all, Ascension deck building game for iOS. Playing this app allowed me to experience Ascension without the usual shuffling and card sorting found in deck building games. I wanted Mageling to be just as effortless to play and enjoyable. Mageling uses a unique set of dice-based mechanisms. Sorry, to capture some
of
the to capture some of the feeling of the Ascension app in a tabletop environment. It is quick to set up and teach, and it has a components that make it easy to keep track of gameplay. Mageling flows smoothly and rewards both strategic and tactical gameplay. I hope you enjoy it, Joseph Butler. So, Joseph, good luck. Like I say, I am one of your backers. We are running really long. Kitty said we were going to run long.
I told you that was a lot of feedback, but it's okay.
Yes.
Because the game of today really belongs in On Topic anyway.
It does.
So let's just go ahead and move right along. All right.
So we're going to do this, and I'm going to press the right button this time.
In this episode, we're talking about expansions, and we'll start off by reading the email that inspired it all, from Andrew Fayash. I'm curious about game expansions. How much is too much? Even for your favorite game, where would you draw the line? Chris, I know you may not have a line.
I don't.
I don't know. I think you will. Is your limitation financial, or whether it overcomplicates a game and makes the pool too deep to jump in for new players? As someone who enjoys Munchkin, Smash Up, and games like those that have lots of expansions and can get some crazy strategy combinations for the more advanced players, I don't own and I have no plans to buy all the expansions for it. And I'm normally the type of person that likes to complete things that I really enjoy. In addition, what do you think game developers can do to make expansions more worthwhile? When do you think a new base game is a better idea than some more expansions?
These are great questions, and I'll try to do it justice. Smash Up, I think I've mentioned this before. I own the base game. I own all but one of the expansions. I didn't realize I didn't own one of them until I started entering them all at Board Game Geek.
What?
And I saw one on Board Game Geek. I don't think I have that one. And I checked the big geeky box, and I don't.
Oh my god! You must staying awake at night.
It's terrible. It's so bad. So
it's really been weighing on you.
Yeah. I buy those expansions, even though I don't play them. All the expansions for Cosmic Encounter I own, even though it's almost impossible to play all of those unless you play like four games a day for the next 5 years. Blood Rage, I bought every expansion. That's actually our game of today one that we played with both expansions. The others I still haven't played yet. This is another one by Eric Lang and Cool Mini or Not, which is, you know, it's a one versus many.
Oh, it's an Eric Lang game and you haven't played it.
I know.
I haven't played it either. We need to play that.
We need to play it. I want to get, once Sydney's done with her CPA, she's actually taking one of her CPA tests tomorrow. So she has a week she's giving herself off before she's studying for the next one. Maybe we can sneak in a couple of these games. But I just bought some extra expansions for that game, which I haven't played. So I am a bad judge as far as monetary limits because I'm like, oh, pretty, and I want the whole thing. I have this collector mentality, which is one of the reasons why I kind of like the idea of Codex, because here's everything. You've collected it all.
Right. Congratulations. Now stop buying things.
But to answer the questions, like what we played, Kitty and I played a couple games today with expansions. Josh, you haven't played as many with expansions, you just don't know you have.
Yeah, because it's hard to tell with the games that I play with you, because you've normally got the expansions.
You secret in the expansions without telling us.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I've played a few.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's look at the different kinds of expansions, and then we'll see which ones make sense. So in my mind, there are two major types of expansions. Mm-hmm. One is the adds more of the same. Mm-hmm. So we played Carcassonne today, which was one of our games, and we played it with an expansion that does not qualify here. But a lot of Carcassonne, they do. It just adds more tiles, gives you more player counts, you know, different things like that.
Makes the game take longer.
Right. Well, yes, because there's more tiles. Because there's more tiles, the map is bigger. Mm-hmm. We played Blood Rage today, and one of the expansions in Blood Rage was the Mystics. Mm-hmm. And you would never know that was an expansion unless someone said, oh, this is an expansion.
Yeah.
Because it's just another monster. Well, it's a clan upgrade card. Mm-hmm. And you play the clan upgrade and you get access to the Mystic, which is how you get access to monsters. Mm-hmm. So it feels the same. If you backed that particular game on Kickstarter, like I said, back all Cool Mini or Not stuff on Kickstarter, you would have gotten an extra 8 monsters, right, which are considered mini expansions, which their cards would have just gotten in the deck. So those kind of expansions, let's talk about them first. Like, what do we think about that?
So, like, more of the same expansions? I think that most of the time, it's great to add extra players to the table. Yep. Like, if you want to play with a lot of people, it's fun. But sometimes it can just make the game feel like it takes longer. It's like playing the same thing, but, oh, it's just going to take 20 minutes more to get to the same spot.
Right. Especially for something like Carcassonne, where you're literally adding more things you have to get through.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm wondering if, are there any that you guys have played where you feel that this should have been included originally? Oh, okay. Because I was thinking that surely there's danger here where it's like, why wasn't this part of the original game? So give me some examples.
Yeah. So Arctic Scavengers. This isn't the most popular game.
Right.
You probably haven't even heard about it unless you're, you know, I've seen it unless in game stores and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when it first came out, it was a very, very small deck building game. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot of replayability to it. They released 2 expansions fairly quickly afterwards. And you kind of had to have those expansions to make it like a full game.
Right.
And then the following year, they just released it with, here's the base plus these 2 expansions all in one box.
Even more feels like, oh, you guys just took something core out of the game and then just added it as an extra kind of monetary purchase.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe that almost feels like they made the game and then went, oh boy, we should have done this. And like real quick fixed their
Yeah, it could be that. Maybe.
It could be either way.
But it might have felt to anyone like you who bought it, like, hey, well, hang on a sec.
It was kind of limited. Well, another one I'll give you an example to is Warhammer Quest, the card game.
Right.
So Fantasy Flight released this game last year. And in the box, there's like, I think there's 4 missions that you can do. And it's because it's a solo game or a cooperative game. And you play those 4 missions and then you're like, okay, I want more. It's like, well, you can just replay the same things over and over and over. But I want more content. Right. Now, unfortunately, they had planned to release more content. Yeah. But they fell out with, why am I forgetting it? The place that does Warhammer, Games Workshop.
Oh, yeah.
And Games Workshop owns that license, so there won't be any more expansions to this game. It's like, it's done. So it's like, this game feels unfinished. There's not a lot of content there. Another one is Shadowrun, the card game. Uh-huh. It first came out, there were 3 missions. You did the intro mission, you did the middle mission like 25 times, and then you could do the final mission. It's like, it just feels like it's not quite finished.
There should be some more here. Like, oh, they've left something out. And so that one did have expansions as well?
The Shadowrun one did, but it's still, to my mind, even with the expansions, like they released some character expansions and things like that, it's still not quite where I want it to be something that I would keep going back to.
I mean, is this a necessary evil for the people who make these games? Like, I know I've heard before from you, Chris, that it's sometimes very hard to make money making games.
Sure.
And I don't know whether this is a way for them to kind of drip, you know, get you hooked on a kind of mechanic and then say, okay, now you're only willing to pay for the base game price, but now you're in, you're going to pay a little bit more. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think that's a necessary evil and they kind of need that? Or do you
I think it's an entire game model. Look at Dominion. So Dominion released with the base set, and I'm going to, just off the top of my head, I have not fact checked this, but I believe there's probably close to a dozen expansions. Is Katie counting those expansions?
Counting Catan.
Oh, counting Catan expansions.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready for my moment.
Yeah. So I think there's like almost 10 to 12 expansions for Dominion, which adds, some of those expansions add additional rules, but many of them just add new cards.
Right.
You didn't need them. The base game is totally playable.
Right.
But once you've played through all those cards, you want to see the next new flavors. So that's their model. Living card games. They release a base set of cards, and they release a new pack of cards every single month. Those are basically expansions, and that's their model. These cards aren't necessary to play the game. They just add more flavor to the game.
And there is like an argument that says that is exciting in its own right. I mean, you know, I remember growing up and it wasn't a game, but I was like collecting sports cards or whatever. And it was just so exciting to think like, oh, I need these other things. There was an element of me that really enjoyed that and kind of hunting down those last things and collecting it all, like you said. But then it's just when it becomes, you know, what point does it become kind of a bit manipulative and you think,
the collectible
cheated.
Card game, which are really just expansions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's their mechanic, is selling the expansions. So how many Catan or Carcassonne?
No, this is Catan.
Oh, Catan.
So the Catan ones... I'm looking through this Wikipedia page, and I'm not sure all of these count as technical expansions. I'm counting like 18 things here, though.
Wow.
Yeah, because I think what happens is...
There's like scenarios, two scenario packs. There's also some of these might be reskin type things. I'm trying to not count those.
Well, but if you look at it, so Catan has... You have a bunch of like the knights and... castles and the barbarians. Here,
yeah, well, the ones that I knew about and had thought of as the Catan ones that I've played before are seafarers, knights and cities, traders and barbarians, explorers and pirates.
Yep. And each one of those has a 5 and 6 player add-on kit.
Uh-huh.
Catan, I have one expansion, and that's the 5 and 6 player to the base game. I hate all expansions to Catan.
Why?
I just find it just
Seafarers,
adds...
I did not mind very much. I haven't ever done Cities and Knights, but I feel like it would be very... And I have not done Explorers and Pirates, but I have Traders and Barbarians, and I hated it.
Yeah. So this is, gets us into the other type of expansion, the adds rules.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we can keep talking why I don't like Catan.
Yeah.
The Catan expansions is because it adds rules.
It adds too many rules.
Yep.
Because we can also talk about Carcassonne.
Yep.
And that's what one of the other games we played today. And we played with the Dragons and Princesses expansion.
Which we actually did like quite a bit.
We really enjoyed. Chris normally is not a big fan of Carcassonne because there's not a lot of player interaction. You put down your meeples and you can like mess up somebody's city, which he totally did to me.
I did. But she ate 3 of my guys sitting in the abbeys.
Or yeah. The so normally you can't... interact with the other players. Once you put down your meeple, it's there until your road is complete, your city is completed, your abbey, whatever.
You can block people, but that's about it.
You can try to place your farmers and cities in manipulative places so you'll share the points or try to steal someone's points. But mostly it's just, you know, like you're playing your own puzzle. You're building the map together. With the princess and the dragon, the princesses can kick knights out of the cities. So there goes that meeple off the board.
Which is just a great thing to think about. If you play a city tile with a princess in it, the knight disappears with the princess.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah. So happy thoughts.
No one can see my eyebrows on the radio. But then there's a dragon. So every time you play a volcano, the dragon goes on the volcano. And then when you pull a dragon tile, you move the dragon six spaces, and it starts with the active player, and then each person moves it one square.
Right.
And if it goes into a square with a meeple, it eats the meeple. Hmm. Unless you have the fairy there protecting you, the dragon can't go into the fairy square. And
if you have the fairy at the start of your turn, you get an extra point. And you
I was really bad at keeping track of.
And you get the fairy by not placing a meeple. So if you ever place a tile but don't place a meeple, you can put the fairy anywhere you want. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of, it adds this player interaction. But what Kitty and I notice is, even though the dragon eats people, mm-hmm. because her and I had to go back and forth in moving the dragon, it didn't feel like, oh, I drew a dragon tile and I get to eat all your guys. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, crap, I drew a dragon tile. I have to move him so I don't get eaten.
So you don't get eaten. You can move it. So, like, you think that you might be able to eat me, but if I can move you, like, I manipulated it a couple times where I was like, ha, 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 and we just went in a square around my guy.
Yep. But you passively brought up an interesting thing with expansions that add new rules. You kept forgetting to add the point for the fairy.
I did.
Because it's a completely new scoring mechanic that you normally wouldn't need to pay attention to, but now with this expansion.
Especially with Carcassonne, because it's usually like big blocks of like, and now I score 12 points. The add one every turn is just completely different from the core rules.
Especially if it's a game like Carcassonne, which is seen as a classic game. You've been playing it for a long time. You're in your set sort of ways of doing it. But I mean, that's the other flip side of it. And I think why you guys enjoyed the expansion was that, you know, it's a game you probably have played a ton. And this kind of, if it's done right, the rule changes, then it's kind of refreshing and it gives mm-hmm. it a new feel, right? Am I right in saying that?
Yep. Well, and for Carcassonne, like, I actually don't like the base game for what Kitty said is because there's not a whole lot you can do. You draw your tile, you lay your tile, you can block somebody by putting a tile that's bad for them there.
Sure.
But this felt like we were actually interacting with each other the entire game.
Right.
Like, I'm going to steal the fairy from you just in case we draw a dragon tile because I want the dragon to be able to eat your farmer. You know, like, it always felt like a back and forth, but it did not feel like we were screwing each other over.
Right.
So
that's great because that's one that's changed the rules, but it's actually done it in a positive way for you.
Yes.
Whereas the Catan ones you said were negative.
Now just extra rules for this. It felt clunkier. Like the rules felt clunkier. It wasn't the base game anymore.
Right.
Like, I don't know. It just
isn't always a bad thing, but in this case for you, it was.
Yeah. Now I will say Seafarers is not that bad. I played it on the iPad. It's not bad. It's just, it's clunky because now I'm building boats, which are really just roads.
Right.
And if you just made the water deserts, you'd have the exact same thing, which is why I don't really mind it all that much because it's really the exact same thing. Even mm-hmm. you follow your boats down to your roads and it still counts as longest road. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just a change in what the piece looks like.
Okay.
It doesn't change the mechanics of the game all that much.
Right.
The Knights and Cities one, it adds different ways that you can get bonus points. It protects you from the thieves.
Right.
So there's some extra interaction there. It didn't feel necessary so much. So.
And then that's the danger, isn't it? Because if you take that risk of changing the rules in this second type of expansion, and you get it wrong, then, you know, people might feel a bit cheated. Like, oh, I just paid for this expansion and I don't really like it. And I think it's worse now because of that. And God, I just spent this money on it.
Yep.
But I mean, I suppose for the game makers, it's not that much of a risk. You already have Catan, the base game. You've forked out the money. There's kind of no going back, right? For the player's point of view, other than, you know, kind of a marred experience and like, maybe this company's not doing it exactly right.
But there are also expansions where people will say, don't even play the game without the expansion. You know, like I said, the Arctic Scavengers, for example.
Right.
That's not the best example. There are better examples out there.
Uh-huh.
But there are some expansions where this should now become part of the game. Yeah. And when the games are re-released, they are part of the game. Like, they just make that, this expansion is included, even though you would never know it because it's just built into the rules at that point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is bringing up the kind of, does it make it too deep or difficult to jump in for new players? I mean, it sounds like Catan does make it more clunky and difficult for new people.
We'll answer that in a second. It seems like Kitty wants to read something.
Oh, yeah. She's very dramatically.
this is the answer, I think, is can it make it too hard and clunky?
Right.
With Carcassonne, you can mix all of the expansions together, which I kind of want to just like get them all and do it one time just to see if we can even fit the map on a table.
Right.
We're going to have to go upstairs to the even bigger table, and we can only build in one direction at some point because it's going to get too wide. So this is the rules for what is on the dragon's menu in Carcassonne. And you have to look at the base game. The dragon will eat a meeple. The dragon will eat. This also says it's the base game, but I've never encountered it. The abbot, the dragon will eat.
I don't know what that.
Yeah, I think that's a.
Is that the thing? The
secretly an expansion.
That's in the cloister or something.
No, it looks like a different little figure.
It is a different figure.
Yeah, I don't know. Right. Expansion one, it will eat your large meeple. Expansion two, it will eat your builder. Expansion two, it will eat your pig. Expansion four, it will eat the meeple off the tower. Expansion 5, it will eat your mare. Expansion 5, it will eat your wagon because a meeple is pulling the wagon. It will eat your shepherd from expansion 9. 1B, the dragon will not eat. Land tiles, the fairy. It won't eat your tower pieces, your barn, your bridge, or your castle from expansions 3, 4, 5, 8, and 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, because
that feels like too much.
Yeah. Because I lean towards Spencer's way of thinking that like I don't want too many rules to kind of have to juggle in my head. And there's definitely the danger with these expansions, like you've clearly pointed out. It's like, oh wow, I'm gonna have to remember all this. Jeez.
Yep. So let's make sure we're answering Andrew's questions here.
Sure.
How much is too much? I think we've talked about that. There's limits to the number of new rules that we want in a game, but for new options of the same that fit in the same rules, that we can expect a little bit more leeway there, but only to a limit because eventually you just get too many new options. Financial, I think everyone is going to be limited financially in some way or another. Like, yes, I spend a lot of money on games, but honestly, I spend a lot less than I would if I had unlimited funds. So I've not bought any of the Catan expansions except for the 5 and 6 player game. I actually like the 5 player game best in Catan because you get a chance to buy between every person's turn. And I think it keeps people engaged between every turn that way. So there are financial limitations there. For me, whether it's overly complicates the game and makes the pool too deep or jump into new players, I may still get the expansion, even if it does add complications, because that's interesting to me. But usually when I teach it, I leave those out.
Chris threw me in the deep end with Blood Rage today.
Yes.
And I will say it was a little tough for me.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm pretty good at learning games. So, I don't know.
Never played Blood Rage before, playing with 2 expansions. And actually, I want to mention the Gods expansion. I don't recommend that expansion. It just seems like they are always starting in the same territories. Especially in a lower count game.
Yeah.
And we kept forgetting to move them after the attack because, again, that's another fiddly rule.
The one point. Yeah. It's...
Yep. The concept is interesting. So if you haven't played the Gods expansion for Blood Rage, essentially there's gods that sit on the territories, and there's 2 in any game. You randomly pick them, and it modifies the rules in that territory. And what we were playing with was one of the promo gods, which is Healy from Sam Healy from Dice Tower. That one made it so any unit that was played in that territory always cost 1, regardless of any other factors. And then the Loki, which was the losers, got the glory for battle instead of the winners. And we just kept forgetting to move them. They just didn't seem to add much except for complications.
Yeah.
But the Mystics I really like.
Although, to be fair, Josh did steal like 8 of my glory points also.
Yeah.
Not to jump back on the... I'm still mad at Josh.
Not that she's bitter about it or anything, but...
The Mystics, though, I never even got a Mystic.
Yeah. Well, that's because Josh had drafted both the Mystic cards.
Yeah.
Yep. So Blood Rage is a drafting game, and one of the things you have to know, one of the reasons why Kitty was at such a disadvantage, because Josh and I had played before, is... When you're drafting, it really helps to know what cards are coming up. And normally what I do when I teach that game is I deal everyone 2 green, 2 red, and 2 black cards randomly for the first age. And then we'll draft the second and third age. For this one, we drafted all 3 ages and played with all the expansions, which really set Kitty in the back a little bit.
I still think I was doing okay.
You did fine, actually.
Except for that one move.
Yeah. Yep.
See, what I would like to see for that game would be new cards for that you're drafting, because that's the bit I love the most. It's like you get these cards in front of you and you really have trouble picking because they're so good.
I don't know. Me and Chris, Josh had like 3 stacks that he had to pick from at the same time because we're like, yeah.
Classic analysis paralysis again, as usual for me. But I loved it. I really enjoyed agonizing over it and then being like, no, this is it. This is my one I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the expansions for Blood Rage, like I said, there's extra monster cards you can get. And the Mystics were actually additional cards.
Okay, yeah. So we did get some extra cards.
But they don't have an expansion as far as I know. Actually, that's not true. The 5-player does add more cards. I don't think it adds anything unique. There might be 1 or 2 unique cards in the 5-player expansion, but you have to play with 5 players before you'd put those cards in. Mm-hmm. So it adds some extra battle cards and quests and things like that.
I had one, I'm sure. Developers, yeah. What do you think developers can do to make expansions more worthwhile? This is what I want to understand from you guys. What
so
do you think?
I'm going to use Cosmic Encounter as an example to this.
Okay.
Cosmic Encounter, their expansions do 2 things. They add content that exists now, so variable content on what's already there, and they add new rules in the same expansion.
Right.
And you can pick and choose what you want. So every Cosmic Encounter expansion, or at least the first 4, I believe, added the ability to add another player. So just had enough pieces to say, okay, now it's a 5-player game, now it's a 6, now it's a 7, now it's an 8. Wow. So if you have all the expansions, you can play an 8-player game of Cosmic Encounter. When we get video, you'll see what Kitty's doing right now. But...
don't like that game.
But it's a good example of what you can do with an expansion. Right. Because you also get more alien races that you can play with. And then you have these extra, like, here's 20 new cards that you can use as a reward deck. Mm. Or here's a new optional mechanic for you can use these tokens for. Or whatever the case is. Mm. I like that style. It gives you flexibility.
You know what game I think would do really well with expansion, and I would really love to see it, is Above and Below.
Yeah.
You could add so much. And, like, I think that the storybook there really is, you know, what could be expanded is you could have, like, so much more to explore there. Like, it's just more, like, bits and, and it doesn't add any more rules or mechanics, really. Mm. That games like that, that kind of expansion I like, is games that you feel like might lose their replayability after time.
If you hear the same stories over and over.
Yeah. You can just add new story. And then it feels like a fresh game again.
Yeah. Well, actually, this is interesting because it goes right to his next question, which is, when do you think a new base game is a better idea than more expansions? So Near and Far is another game based on the Above and Below engine.
Right.
And it is a new base game. You don't need it's a fully playable, which is actually another type of expansion that I sort of left off, which is the expansion but fully playable.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need the base game to play this expansion, but if you have the base game, you can mix them together.
Hmm.
Inferno, for example, Arcadia Quest Inferno is like that. You don't need the base game to do that, but if you had the base game, you could mix in all of the cards and characters and played with Inferno and the base game.
That's a really good one. And I think that could go, like you say, into the developers' ideas to do that more often. Because I think, you know, if you can buy that game on its own and play it, you know, if your friend has the base game, then you can also get together and, like, mix and match. That's a great idea, yeah.
Well, not only that, if you buy the expansion game, we'll call it, for lack of a better term, suddenly the base game becomes an expansion for your expansion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that can have people go back and think, oh, I really like this Arcadia Quest Inferno. I want to go back and buy the original game too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a way of marketing that old game, where if you have something just the expansion, people are like, well, I got to buy the base game and then I have to spend another $40 for this expansion. Maybe not.
Because that's a good point, because then expansions, once they're out and people haven't played it, can become a barrier to even buying it in the first place.
Like,
I could buy this, but then I'm going to want everything and that's going to cost me X amount. Now I'm just not going to buy any of it.
Yep.
Whereas if you have that ability to mix and match any of them, you don't have that barrier as much. Yep.
Well, if you look at Magic, just keep going back to there, that's what they do. Like, every block is essentially a standalone playable expansion.
I see. Mm-hmm.
But you can mix it with everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that same idea, like, we don't normally call Magic releases expansions, but it really is. That's that's really what it is at its core.
But doesn't Magic expansions kind of, like, almost invalidate the old ones, or is that the old way that it used to do?
No.
It depends on the kind of play.
Yeah. Okay.
The, like, the technical like tournament rules that is it Wizards of the Coast?
Yeah.
Does Magic? Yeah. That they encourage, that they promote the tournaments for, is just the past
two years.
Yeah.
Mm. Two blocks, technically. But mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas if you go to any store, you're going to find a ton of different kinds of play.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
and
true.
And everyone can find their own kind of niche within Magic.
And the truth is you can play all of the cards together.
Right.
You know, some of the earlier cards, you need to make sure you have the errata so that you know how they work with the new rules. Mm-hmm. But they're all fully backwards compatible. Like you mm-hmm. can errata them into existence. Cool. So
I'm still hung up on Near and Far. Or,
we can play Near and Far again. We'll play it tomorrow.
It's Above and Below. I'm worried.
Oh, Above and Below.
I'm worried. Sorry. I'm a little bit tired. I've had a cold this week. Sorry, guys. No, I'm curious if it has new rules or if it's going to be kind of the same thing, but with like a different look to it and different storylines.
I think we can download the rules if you want to read them. Yeah.
I'm excited.
All right. I'll download the PDF and send it over to you.
Yay. I could also do it by myself because I'm a grown up, but... I'm a little bit tired.
Near and Far, search for it on Kickstarter. I'm fairly certain the rules are there. That's one of the cool things about board games is a lot of times you'll get the rules PDF ahead of time, which creates better instruction books. We should do an entire episode on instructions books. But it creates better instruction books because more people are able to read it and give feedback mm-hmm. on it and ask questions
before
like, this is unclear.
Yeah.
Right.
And proofread it and things like that. You know, you have, mm-hmm. even if you just have a few hundred people looking at it, that's more than a single proofreader.
Mm-hmm.
So. But I really like this episode. I like this topic. And as always, we could continue to talk for hours and hours and hours. But we are near our time. Actually, we're quite at our time. So I think we need to call it a night and we'll see how this,
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can also research on Facebook @tabletopgametalkpodcast or directly on Twitter @tabletopgametalk. So if you like what you hear, help us spread the word by liking or sharing our posts. And now you can support us via Patreon. Get more information at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Until next week, when we talk about Dungeons & Dragons, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.